Good morning, friends. Thank you again for joining us. Welcome to this program. Today we're going to be talking about chapter 5, verses 22 and 23.
Right.
Getting towards the end of chapter 5, and then we're going to be talking about how to meditate, what to do. So this verse 22 says, "The enjoyments born of contacts are wombs of sorrow. They have a beginning and an end." I mean, the poetry of the Gita sometimes is just remarkable.
It's a fascinating line.
A womb, sorry?
That's a fascinating line, yes.
Yeah, a womb of sorrow. A womb is where a baby is born and is stays there for 9 months and then is born and escapes from the womb. So in this verse, Krishna says that pleasures that we get from the sense organs, from our contacts with sense objects in the world, those pleasures, those enjoyments, he calls them wombs of sorrow, meaning that they have a beginning and an end. A child is born, a child is conceived, stays in there for 9 months, and then is born, and it's empty again.
Right.
So these enjoyments are wombs of sorrow. What does he mean by that? I mean, we were talking last time about different pleasures, and each one of us has a different pleasure, so I don't want to go through all of them, but each one of our contacts, our sense organs, each thing gives us a different pleasure.
Right.
Generally, the examples given by most swamis are the ones of food, sweets, desserts, stuff like that. But you can imagine other sense objects and pleasures that you might have. So how can there be no end to this pleasure? I mean, take ice cream. You like ice cream. How can you not like ice cream? What do you mean that there's a beginning and an end? An end to my liking ice cream? I don't think so. Yes. And the way it works is like this. It's known as neutralization and desensitization. So if you like something and your mother or wife or girlfriend or your boyfriend, husband, father, keeps showering it on you. Say, honey, you're home from college. I know you like this.
Yeah.
Here, eat it. I brought it for you specially picked you up from the airport. Here it is. And first time you eat it, you say, this is delicious. Next morning, he gives it to you again. Next afternoon, he gives it to you. Next evening, how long before you say, I had enough of this, please. I never want to see this again. Yet you loved it so much. So that is known as neutralization or desensitization, where you become desensitized to it, you become neutralized to it, and you say, I don't like it anymore. Mothers typically go to their children and say, here, I made your favorite XYZ. And children typically say, oh, mom, I don't like that anymore.
Yeah.
And you say, what? What are you talking about? This was your favorite. You say, yeah, maybe a year ago, no more. So what is that all about? Again, that's the womb of sorrow. It has a beginning and an end. It's a desire.
Yeah.
So what happened is that you cannot repeat the pleasure. Why? Because the person you is not the same anymore a year later, because your tastes change.
Right.
Your desires change. You change. The object that you're getting the pleasure from changes. It's not the same. And the conditions surrounding your partaking of that pleasure also change. So those three things cause even the greatest of pleasures to be less pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, I go to a restaurant the first time. My friend takes me and says, oh, you've got to try the food here. It is fantastic. You're going to love it. I say, I don't have a good appetite these days. I don't feel that hungry. So, oh, you got to try this. I sit down and I start to eat and I say, oh my God, this is really amazing. This is good food. I'm so glad you brought me here. Then I go home. I tell my wife, I tell my kids, I tell my friends, I say, you got to come back to that restaurant. Now, the first time, there was something about the atmosphere in the restaurant, the person who was serving us, the chef maybe, the food, whatever it was, and my hunger that made me go there, and I said it was great.
And
second
the novelty
I go
of it.
There,
yeah.
Sorry?
And the novelty of it.
And the novelty of it.
Yeah.
Second time I go there, that novelty's not there. the food may be exactly the same, the chef may be the same, but the service may not be the same. The restaurant may be too hot this time. The conditions are different. I'm different. I may not have as good an appetite. I say, this doesn't give me that pleasure. Now I've gotten displeasure. I'm annoyed. And that annoyment, that krodha that comes about, actually ruins my pleasure of it. And this continues on and on. So that you cannot repeat that pleasure. Another thing that we should keep in mind is appetite, right? This brings me to that. It just, I remembered it as I was talking. Your appetite determines how food is going to taste. It's an aside from this. It has nothing to do with what we were talking about before. But if you're a king and you can tell your chefs to prepare different foods, and you tell your chef to prepare something really good, mm-hmm. and he says, sire, whatever you want, what would you like? And he says, I don't know. I don't feel like I am hungry, but make me something good. Because he's not hungry, nothing that the chef will make for him will taste that good.
Right.
As opposed to if you're starving hungry, you can take a slice of bread, put some butter on it, or maybe without even butter, and eat it, and you say, oh my God, that tastes so delicious.
Right.
Right? Because you're hungry. Without the appetite, no matter how much that chef gives to the king, what he changes is not going to taste as good as that slice of bread with right. some butter on it to somebody who's really hungry. So anyway, you cannot repeat the pleasure because you're not the same, the object is not the same, and the conditions around you are not the same. Also, when there's neutralization, sorry, there's a train. We have to just pause for 1 second. Can you hear me okay, Lou?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. You can go ahead.
Okay.
Yep.
So neutralization and desensitization. When we moved here to this house,
yep.
I loved the fact. Most people say, a train? Why would you want? I love the train, the sound of a train. I'm used to it from childhood. And so it gives me great pleasure. So the other thing is, when contact with the pleasure object stops, what happens? The mind gets vacant. There's a vacuum. So I'm watching TV, and I'm watching an interesting movie, for instance. And as long as that movie is going on, I'm having pleasure because my senses are involved. And when that TV show is over, it gets turned off. What happens? The pleasure is off, and my mind, there's a little bit of a vacuum. My mind is never vacuumous because there's always thoughts going through our minds. But now it says, I'm bored. Yeah. This is typical of our minds. When it doesn't get constant pleasure by its organs or its mind, it says, I'm bored.
Right.
And when it starts to look bored, it says, which one of my sense organs can I utilize to give me pleasure? So just be aware of that process, aware of the fact that these wombs of sorrow are not where you need to search. If you can train yourself, and we will go into how to train yourself to get away from these wombs of sorrow, from these pleasures, you will find that you are much, much better in your process towards self-realization, in your process towards self-discipline. The other thing we should keep in mind is indulgence into these pleasure objects and absence from these pleasure objects. So think of a drug addict. If you have listened to my podcasts on when I was talking about just my episodes and my cases as a psychiatrist, you know that one of the things I did a lot was to treat addiction. And I used to treat people that had addictions to opiates, mm-hmm. morphine and heroin. And those people said to me, they would come and say, Doc, I've lost everything I had. I now steal from my loved ones. I steal from my parents. I steal from my wife's parents. I steal from my kids. It's horrible, Doc. I hate it. I was never like this, but the addiction is so great. And then, you know something? The first few times that I did this drug, I would get such a rush. But now, and here's the key, I can take these drugs and it doesn't give me the high anymore.
Right.
I just need it in order to survive, okay? It doesn't give me the high anymore. I need it to survive. And if I don't have it, if it's absent, I feel very sick.
Yeah.
I feel sorrow. So what that means is that these pleasure objects, abstinence gives you sorrow because you don't have it, you're sad, but indulgence no longer brings you pleasure. Keep that in mind. As you keep indulging in these pleasures, it no longer gives you pleasure. However, abstinence gives you sorrow. So think of rich people who have everything in the world. There's this Bollywood actor that we all know about, we saw on the screen and in the news, very famous. He could probably have relations with any actress or woman that he has in his circle. He actually went to the street corner and picked up hookers for like $10. Mm. You know who I'm talking about, Lou?
No. It's a common story, but yeah.
It's a common story, but yeah. I'll tell you another time.
Yep.
But he picked up these, who would pick up these hookers for $10 or whatever. He's a multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
And put them in his car, and the police caught him. His name was all over the newspapers, and people were surprised. I saw the remarks and comments in the newspapers where people would say, what is he doing this for?
Yeah.
And the thing is that indulgence no longer gave him pleasure, because he would go with other women. And so he says, this no longer gives me pleasure. If I stay away from it, it gives me sorrow. So I'm going to try something different just to get myself some pleasure. And even that stopped giving him pleasure.
Right.
And he said it, I'm sad. So the enjoyments born of contacts are wombs of sorrow, and they have a beginning and an end. So why is Krishna saying this? Because he's basically trying to get us away from these desire-ridden activities that he says really serve no purpose. It's momentary, it's short-lived, but you are going to be pleasure-seeking and after it. And as long as you do that, you cannot still your mind, cannot still your emotions, cannot still your intellect, and therefore you're not worthy of meditating. So keep that in mind. Verse 23. Even before a person gets liberated from the body, if that person is able to withstand kama and krodha, desire and anger, he is a yogi, a happy man. So in what he's saying is that at some point we get liberated from this body. Our Atman is free, the body drops off, and during that time, while you're alive and in your body, if you are able to withstand anger and desire, if you're able to control that, that's really where the crux is, controlling your raga, dvesha, likes and dislikes, controlling your desire and anger and greed, you are a happy man. And our life seems to be revolved around acquisition. Get this. I want this. And enjoyment once you get it. And fear that you will lose it once you have it.
Right.
So acquisition, enjoyment, fear of losing, greed to get more, all of those emotions, the six that we talked about. And what he's saying here is that as you ascend the ladder, you have to give up the lower in order to get the higher. You're climbing a ladder towards the top, towards self-realization, towards self-discipline. You are have to give up the lower ladder, the rung on the ladder, in order to go higher. And as you give up the lower and you take the higher one drops off, and then you keep going higher and higher. So even before one gets liberated from the body, if a person is able to withstand desires and anger, greed and jealousy, he is a yogi, a happy man. So friends, we're getting closer to the end of verse chapter 5, and just a few more, and he's going to talk about how to meditate, just a short little thing in verse 27 and 28, and then we're going to go to chapter 6. So thank you so much for joining us. Comments, questions on Facebook, love to hear from you and love to respond. Thank you so much. Lou, thanks so much for your help.
A pleasure.